Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Comedy History 101. What do we do? Yes, we school you in comedy. I am Harmon. I am back in New York from San Francisco, and it's freezing. It's freezing here. It's really cold. So I just got back from SF Sketchfest, and Scott is on his way to the Sundance Film Festival. Do you know what that means? Yes, we have another Comedy History 101 Select from the archive. It's a two-part episode on comedy that crosses the line. Yes, comedy that goes way too far and almost turns into tragedy. You know, the edgy comedy. When comedians do the edgy comedy and people get angry with the edgy comedy. And without further ado,
you're stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
Good thing about doing comedy in Russia, you have captured audience.
You're stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
Comedy History 101.
You've got a funny intro. We don't really have to, like, right? I've heard it.
Oh, I know. But usually how when I do it in post, I usually have us, like, right in the middle of a conversation. Okay. That's where I start. I usually start it right in the middle of a conversation.
Okay.
It's kind of like, what is that called? Like, kind of like a...
In media res.
Del art.
In media res.
Yeah. So it's like, all right, we're already... It's like...
We're already
into people
it.
Tune in, we're already into it. It's like... And it leaves them thinking, what were they talking about before?
Okay, so should we go back to our conversation?
What did I miss out? But they're already up to speed. Mm-hmm. So anyways, welcome back, people. We've been off for a little bit. Welcome back to our podcast, Comedy History 101, where we talk about the history of comedy. I am Harmon Leon, and with me is...
Hello, I am Scott Kalanico. I am not a robot from Edinburgh.
But if you were a robot from Edinburgh, would you talk in a robot voice?
Yeah, that was kind of...
Or you'd be like Westworld robot.
Oh, like the
new one.
It's
kind of like a hack robot.
The new one, yeah. I haven't seen any of that one.
What's that?
Are they crossing the line?
Oh, yeah. Whoa, wait. Yeah. Which brings us to our topic today is comedy that crosses the line. So, as of late, there have been a few notable comedians that that have gotten skewered over crossing the line. They have taken comedy too far.
Or they
weren't doing comedy to begin with. That's why they couldn't defend their actions. Which is a fine line. Can I start
sure,
with a George Carlin quote?
Go ahead.
George Carlin said, "I think it's the duty of the comedian to find out where the line is drawn and cross it deliberately." Says George Carlin.
I'm behind that. I can endorse that statement 100%.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are times. Well, I think, I mean, we'll get into this further, but there are times where, yeah, it's good to cross the line. If you're trying to make, say, social change, but then the bad cross the line again when you're not following the general rule of comedy, which is punch up, not punch down. And when you're crossing the line and you're punching down, then, again, that's the difference between comedy and tragedy. So it's right. Like comedy is punching up. Tragedy is punching down. So we will dive into this more. But when I say the words Kathy Griffin, what comes to mind of recent?
Unfunny.
Yeah, so yeah. It caused an uproar as like if you haven't been on the planet okay. Earth,
yes,
for like the last month or 2 months ago, whenever that came out,
right.
She got a little uproar when I think it was like, was it just specifically a photo shoot aimed towards Instagram?
I don't remember exactly what the photo shoot was for, but she was taking a bunch of pictures with that.
So she posted a picture of her holding up a bloody severed Trump head, and she has like this kind of deadpan look on her face. I think her attempt was she was being edgy.
Yeah, that was the thing, the edgy comedy.
Yeah, the edgy comedy.
I'm gonna look at that just to remind me about that. Okay. Keep talking.
Yeah, so needless to say, that caused quite an uproar when you have a president's bloody severed head and you're holding it. It caused such an uproar that I think within a day she held this like crying press conference.
There's a bunch of old white guys trying to silence me, and I'm just here to say that's wrong.
And just going, Donald Trump is trying to destroy me. She's like Kathy Griffin, co-host the New Year's Eve thing with Anderson Cooper.
The D-list.
And yeah. So her, in the press conference, she said, I am a comic. I cross the line. I move the line. Then I cross it. I went way too far.
Yeah.
But the whole point is first of all, I think what was really, it wasn't offensive to me that it's a severed Trump head. I think it was offensive to me as a comedian that it's just like, if you knew what you're doing and again, it's what kind of reaction you're going to get, at least be able to defend your action. Just don't cry on a press conference and just say, I'm so sorry. Trump's trying to destroy me.
He broke me.
Yeah, I mean, it's because I've been following her for a while, man. I think she's okay. I have laughed at some of her stuff, but I think she's also kind of a comedian where she really enjoys the being famous part of it, And so I feel like this was something where she was gonna do something just to cause an outrage, and it did. And so now it's this, because that's her theme. Her thing is saying outrageous stuff and doing outrageous things, and it's kind of interesting to see when it finally everybody goes, "Yep, no, you cross the line, dude. That was too outrageous." And then for somebody to to kind of give in and just go, "Yeah, you're right, it was."
Yeah, first of all, what were you thinking? I mean, it's just it's. And we'll talk about this later. It wasn't like Kramer from Seinfeld suddenly just snapping at hecklers and using racist words. She booked a studio to do a photo shoot. Mm-hmm. They had to create the props.
Yeah.
She hired a photographer.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's just like, at what point do you think, this is going to make me all edgy?
Yeah, I know.
And then the next thing you're just like crying in a press conference.
Yeah, so somebody, at one point, somebody was painting blood onto a fake dismembered Trump head. And
the props department.
Yeah, they had to go, nobody just, pulled the brake, the train brake.
Yeah, so, and then she comes in the Trump is trying to destroy me, and I think one of her quotes was, "He broke me."
Yeah. Okay, dude.
Again, it's just like, if you had a point to make, stick to that point and just go, it might have gone too far, but here is what I was trying to say, about such and such.
Mm-hmm.
Totally. At least defend your actions,
right.
And not just like just completely give in to. The whole point is again, it's just kind of just screaming like fire in a movie theater. You're going to get that reaction.
Right.
You're holding up a president's head.
Yeah, that's you can't
with
that.
With blood on it.
Or yell fire in a theater. There was some Supreme Court case about that.
Again, do you think is it a big thing about comedy that crosses the line is when it succeeds or fails? Is there a free speech issue here?
Yeah, I mean now we're getting into this. I mean, I don't know how you're gonna move this along, but yeah, there's lots of stuff that's great to talk about here. I mean, it's one of the links that you sent was the thing about the Jerry Seinfeld talking about people doing comedy in college campuses now, You know, yeah. Where you have the whole trigger warning issue.
You know? Of like what you can or can't say, yeah, like yeah. when you perform at colleges.
Right, yeah. Like you'll have to say, oh, I'm going to use this word and this word. You know, it's just, yeah, it's just like people are, it does seem like people are kind of starting to get a little, yeah, free speech doesn't seem to be quite proliferating the way it used to.
Okay, then could you take that argument and say, is that backing up what Donald Trump says, that it's this political correctness gone awry? You know, it's just everyone's so I don't have time to be politically correct, which I guess that's free speech as well. But then again, he's a president and not a comedian.
Yeah, so that's you dealing with something else, and then
yeah,
like he gets to tweet about transgender people getting kicked out of the military, and then the military saying, no, hold on, wait a minute, you know, that's a kind of a different area.
Yeah, exactly. And then so then the other big comedy that crosses the line was, of course, and this was all in the same week when Bill Maher, you know, used I don't even like using the N-word because that's just like. In itself, there should be like another word that implies that, because that just puts the word in your head or people's heads, you know. So he used like racist, you know, language on his show. He was trying to make a point, though. That was, you know, slightly different about like, you know, Jeff Sessions and whatnot. But, you know, point well taken. It's like, you know, again, like ice. I always get my ices mixed up. Ice Cube.
Right.
Yeah, not tea.
Right.
Was on the show the next week. Where it's just like, you know, that's not your word to use. That's, you know, it's yeah. just like every time, you know, an African American hears it, it hits like a knife.
Because I think it's a lot of guys out there who cross the line because they a little too familiar, or they think they too familiar, or it's guys that, you know, they might have a black girlfriend or two that made them some Kool-Aid every now and then, and they think they can cross the line. And they can't. You know, it's a word that has been used against us. It's like a knife, man. And you can use it as a weapon or you can use it as a tool. It's been used as a weapon against us by white people. And we're not gonna let that happen again by nobody, because it's not cool. Mm-hmm.
So what, I mean, I don't know, I just, I mean, I understand what they're saying, obviously. You know, Ice Cube knows what he's talking about more than me.
Mm-hmm.
I just, yeah, but it's the whole thing of, here's this one word you can't say, you know? I mean, that mm-hmm. word, like, we're not even saying it. You and I are not even saying this word. And,
no,
you know,
I don't want me ever to be recorded
yes.
or, like, on stage or anything.
It's just weird because now you can see people walking around the street wearing, you know, they could be wearing a shirt that says fuck on it, right? That's not a
yeah.
big deal anymore. Whereas
right.
the other word, you can't even print it, you know?
Well, because fuck isn't aimed at a group of people to, like, kind of suppress them.
Okay, all right.
You know, going with, like, Ice Cube said, is, like, you know, even in the New York clubs, you hear, like, there'll be, like, a white comedian on stage who says, you know, he gives off the attitude, like, I am so, you know, comfortable around other cultures that they'll, you know, use that word on stage.
Right.
And it's, again, it's just, like, not, it's not your, it's not your place. Even, you're not that comfortable.
But it, that's the weird thing, is now we're discussing this academically, you know, in a
yeah.
Constructive way, and we're still not saying it.
Right.
You know, which is like, that's mm-hmm. taking it out of, like, I could see not using it in a social context or directing it at someone, but now we're just mm-hmm. talking about the use of the word, and we can't say the word. We're not, neither one of us are saying the word because it's
right.
being recorded.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't, even if it's not recorded, I wouldn't say the word.
Uh-huh. Even if you were just talking about it.
Well, no, it's not because it was recorded. Again, I think it's it goes back to why comedy that crosses the line that's not constructive, because that's just, you know, again, it's something that's punching down. It's using to suppress people rather than you are punching up at, like, say, the government, you know,
mm-hmm.
that's, you know, a controlling factor. You know, it's a you know, comedy in the context of like at the expense of like you know, suppressing, you know, a group of people.
Right, but to look, go back to my example though, but as we're discussing what we're discussing right now, if we were to say that word, we wouldn't be using it in that context.
Right.
But neither one of us is saying it.
I'm not saying it.
Okay, that's fine. I'm making a point. I'm not saying it either. I'm saying I'm making a point. That's my point.
But I mean, if you go back to comedy that crosses line, I mean, there's a long history of satire in comedy that's intended to cross the line. And when it crosses the line, it's like, you know, again, it's like taking on the powers that be, you know, it goes back to like Aristophanes. You know, have you read his plays? I think it's like The Frogs and the Clouds.
Yeah, there was, what was the interesting thing that, because he was like kind of old-timey Greek dude known for his comedy plays. Mm-hmm. What's interesting about, I was reading about those.
Well, first of all, well done in bringing the readers up to speed, or the listeners up to speed on who Aristophanes is. I forgot about it, but well done.
Old, thank you.
Good,
you're
podcasting.
Okay. Old-timey Greek dude, let's leave it at that. We're not going to go too into-depth into him. But what was interesting that I saw in the Wikipedia article, but what was interesting was they talked about how, like, in ancient...
So it has to be true.
Yeah, in ancient Greek play, it was all footnoted. In ancient Greek plays, the chorus in a comedy was always bigger than it was in a tragedy. You know, you'd have the chorus of people on stage who would kind of be narrating.
Yeah.
And then in Aristophanes' plays, he made kind of a point of using people in the chorus, known like prominent businessmen and leaders of the town in the chorus to make kind of another you know, little crossing the line, pre-crossing the line there. And there apparently there's a lot of turd jokes in this place.
Oh my god!
Yeah,
crossing the line with turd jokes.
Into the olden days.
But so one of the edgiest stories, and I studied this in a college satire class, is Jonathan Swift's A Modest Proposal, which I think is like probably one of the most like, if you have like lineage to the edgy comedy of today, I think it's like you know, just a direct link to like Saturday Night Live.
Oh yeah.
A Modest Proposal, which is it was during the famine, the Irish famine, and it was kind of a making the argument that people should sell their children to rich people for food,
right?
As food, you should eat babies is basically what they're saying.
That was the proposal of the title. Yeah, mostly specifically Irish babies.
Yeah. So the point being is, like, the point he was trying to make is that rich people actually just don't care about the poor to the point where, you know, that they would actually eat children.
Yeah, that's, well,
not it's too just much, like dark, dark humor.
Yeah, not too much different nowadays.
Yeah, and also the lineage is a direct lineage to the modern day. Well, I wouldn't even say it's modern day because I think it had its run of dead baby jokes, which again is like comedy that crosses the line.
Yeah, and that was the interesting thing was that apparently because those started making not a comeback, but they first started making their first appearances like in a major way, like in the 60s, and people have theorized that was kind of a reaction to like the growing feminism of the time and just like the overall kind of freedom that people were feeling in the 60s. So to what better way to bottle that all up than to make some dead baby jokes? do you remember
I don't understand. I mean, I sort of understand the connection.
Yeah.
But I don't understand the connection.
Well, I mean, it was all because
like what's a good dead baby joke? Like,
all right, let's oh, okay, you ready? Do you know? Do you remember any? I got one.
Yes.
What's? Okay.
I don't, but I have Google.
Okay. Okay. Well, what's red and goes 100 miles an hour?
A dead baby in a blender.
Yeah, exactly. That would be it.
Oh, a story I came across recently was this Mark Twain story. It's called The United States of Lynchardom, and at the time that Mark Twain wrote it, I think it was like early 1900s, he knew his audience, and he knew that it was just way too edgy, and it only got published like after he passed away.
Oh, the Lynchdom, yes.
Yeah, yeah. So the essential takeaway of, you know, again, it's very satirical, but he knew that how his audience would react if he published the story, which was essentially a satire of mob mentality. I read this like about a month ago, the short story. So it's kind of like in essence, all people have mob mentality ingrained in them, and that you know, anyone is of that time was capable of you know, being a part of an angry mob.
Yeah, I mean, he wanted to, you know, he was pretty aware of his public reputation, so that was something he wanted to not have published until after he was no longer around.
I don't even know if he said like, publish this when I'm not no longer around. He just knew that it was something of the time that it crossed the line of with his audience.
Okay.
I mean, obviously he wrote it and had the points that he wanted to make, but he knew enough that there would be like a public outcry against it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know if it was like, okay, they wouldn't see it at the satirical value, or it's just like you just don't joke about that, or what. But he didn't allow the story to be published.
Okay. All right. Yeah. He lived a while. Man, I didn't realize he lived until like the 1900s.
Yeah, did you see that Ken Burns two-part documentary on him?
No. Is it good?
Yeah, I've only seen part one.
Okay.
But you know.
All right.
Samuel Clemens.
I know. He had a big bushy mustache. He was kind of like a proto-hipster.
Yeah, he got to start like writing in San Francisco. That was like one of his first early gigs.
Mark Twain.
Yep. And it's so funny, is Mark Twain is a steamboat term. Like, he marked the Twain.
Right.
I forgot what Twain means.
It's like a depth.
Might be like depths of river height or something like that. So he's having some fun with his pen name.
Yeah, he was.
So, you know, like you said, but again, I think this ties into like kind of like early modern days of crossing line, because, you know, the United States of Lynchdom, he was trying to write that to wrong. He was trying to like, you know, use it as like a tool of social change to point out this kind of mob mentality of people involved in lynch mobs, which brings up like our next point of, you know, comedy can be a powerful tool for social change when it crosses the line.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the early modern comedian, not modern comedian, but in modern day stand-up comedy, is one man by the name Lenny Bruce.
Lenny. He's from New York.
What do you know about Lenny Bruce, my friend?
I know he got in trouble for being saying the bad words, and then he would go into court and he would read his transcripts in court.
Yeah, isn't that just fucking crazy that like stand-up comedy would get you arrested?
Yeah.
Like the police, and again, like horrible atmosphere for a comedy club.
Yeah.
Like when he was playing like in San Francisco and stuff, like the police would come in and stand on the side of the stage just waiting for him to say like cocksucker or something on stage. And then once he did, he would be arrested and then the show's over.
Yeah, I mean, it's like now you can walk around with a t-shirt that says fuck on it.
Yeah, yeah. And then I think we talked about this in the first episode of Comedy History 101, of the history of the improv comedy club, where there was another comedian on there. I forgot his name. He was the first comedian to play the improv. And he also would get arrested frequently, like in the late 50s. And the fucked up thing that they would do is, and this also applies to modern day, is they would go to court, and then the judge would read their act.
Right, yeah.
They would read, like, Lenny Bruce's act without the benefit of timing.
Yeah.
Or stage presence.
Yeah. So it's not quite the same thing.
I do my act at perhaps 11 o'clock at night. Little do I know that 11 a.m. the next morning, before the grand jury somewhere, is another guy doing my act who's introduced as Lenny Bruce in substance. Here he is, Lenny Bruce in substance. A peace officer who is trained to recognize clear and present dangers, not make believe, does the act. The grand jury watches him work and they go, "That stinks." But I get busted. And the irony is that I have to go to court and defend his act.
Okay, so in tying that into like modern time is like you hear like outrage over, there was a controversy over like Tracy Morgan and Daniel Tosh. Daniel Tosh, you know, again, on paper, it doesn't sound funny. You know, he had that big controversy over making like rape jokes at the Laugh Factory. And then Tracy Morgan also had the controversy of doing like kind of this, you know, anti-gay bit at a comedy club. I forgot what city it was. But the point being is that people in the audience would like tweet like what they say or put on their blog like transcripts mm-hmm. of like Tracy Morgan's act. So again, it's like almost like a modern day the judge you know, reading out the comedy routine where you know, without the benefit of context or timing or stage presence, you know, you're getting it, you know, on someone's blog paraphrase.
Yeah, but the Daniel Tosh thing was, yeah, wouldn't it, pointing out somebody in the audience and just going, wouldn't that be funny if that girl got raped by like five guys now, like right now?
That's horrible.
Yeah, that's not.
But again, you don't know what. I mean, I'm not defending that. I'm just saying you don't know the whole context of what happened. I mean, yeah, it sounds horrible. And again, it goes back to, and I don't want to use the word term punching down and rape in the same sentence, but it's like, you know, you're not. You're the superior one in that scenario because you're the person on stage, and then you're saying to an audience member, you know, you should be raped.
Yeah, I mean, this just—I don't know if there's any context you can put that in to make it. You know, I mean, it's just not. Yeah, I would say they cross the line in not a good way. You know.
Yeah. But that's the thing about stand-up comedy is it's a dialogue that takes place with the person on stage and the audience in that moment. You know, so unless you're in that moment, I'm going 99% on you know, that is a horrible thing that shouldn't have been done. But again, you just don't know if it's just like you're just reading it on someone's blog rather than you're in the room.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we can tie this in with the Michael Richards thing too, because I think I'm of the point of view that it's almost like, I think when you're on the stage at a comedy club, it should be kind of like a free speech zone. You know?
Yeah, I mean, because again, if you start scaling back on what, there are countries like in Turkey, they have stand-up comedy, but there are like things you would be arrested for if you talk about religion, politics. I mean, there's several countries like that where they have comedy, and you're just not there's stuff you are told you cannot talk about. And again, I was in Cuba, I was in Havana in January, and I did a story on the Havana stand-up comedy scene. It's just like, yeah, you can't do anything about Fidel Castro or Raul Castro. Mm-hmm. But they actually do it in a clever way. They do make fun of the politics and the political leaders. They do it in a way that where everyone knows what they're talking about without specifically saying it. And again, that is more clever than just, you know, the edge. Look, I'm holding up Trump's head. It's bloody. Yeah. You know, say what you're trying to say in a clever sort of way rather than, you know, so there was a while like in comedy where the edgy comedians?
Where the edgy comedy. Would this be like would this be like the Dubai comedy explosion?
No, there was like, you know, like guys like Jim Jefferies and guys in that genre where it was like really edgy. Them to make like rape jokes. It was like they're They're so edgy. Nothing is taboo for them.
Oh, I hate women. Women hate me. We hate each other. The only reason I couldn't be gay is because I could never fuck a man. Because I could never fuck something that I respect.
They cross the line at every corner. But is it more clever to say exactly what they're trying to say without blatantly saying it? Because in terms, you're just like pushing buttons at that point.
Because
mm-hmm. you know, and people have such a strong feeling about, something like rape, of course, that you bring it up is going to get a strong reaction, and it's just laziness. It's laziness on the part of the comedian.
Yeah, well, I mean, that was
it's laziness to hold up a severed, bloody trumpet.
Yeah, I think it was like, so this Tosh thing was pretty recent, right?
I think it was 2012.
Wow, that's weird. Okay, because I was in the States. I was in Washington, and that was 2012. Mm-hmm. Might have been really early 2013. Yeah. And I went to, I wound up seeing like four comedians in one night. And mm-hmm. so I went to like one comedy club and then went to another, saw Aziz Ansari that night at the big mm-hmm. club in Washington. And like, there were like, out of the four, it might have been five comedians, out of like the five comedians, four all made like a rape joke. It was like this weird running thing that you could just see yeah. happening, you know, where it was like everybody was doing it, you know? It was just really odd to see.
Yeah, that's, again, it goes, there's that, Arj and I, we would make fun of the edgy comics where right. it's just, you know, it's just kind of like, it's like, okay, you're going to get a reaction.
Right.
It's like, you haven't put any thought into, you know, the joke or the structure of the joke or saying the unsaid. You're just like, bam, here it is, bam. You're going to react, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I could see, like, you know, Tosh being in that club and saying that and it getting a reaction out of the audience, you know? I can see that happening.
Yeah.
I mean, was it cool?
Mm.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And again, it's just like, you brought up like Michael Richards.
Right. Did it cross the line? Did Tosh cross the line? I would say yes there. And not in a good
yeah,
way.
Yeah, yeah. I guess it should be like a game show.
Yeah.
And the judges say like, cross the line.
Line crossed or not. Okay, well, we can work on that.
And with that, my friends, ends part one of our recast of Comedy That Crosses the Line. You know, the edgy, edgy comedy with the edgy, edgy comedians. We'll be back next week with part two of Comedy That Crosses the Line here on
Comedy History 101.
Where we school you in comedy. Thanks a lot for tuning in. Be sure to subscribe and comment on iTunes. We absolutely love that. And with that, bye bye.
You're stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
Good thing about doing comedy in Russia, you have captured audience.
You're stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
Comedy History 101.